RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can also listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz, and 11785 kHz. Or listen to audio on demand at en.voi.co.id. Hello, my listener. Welcome back to English Bulletin over RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. In today's edition, we'll bring you our program summary for today. First, we'll bring you our news, followed by press review, today in history, focus, and news in brief. We'll continue our next program with Indonesian Wonder and Miscellany. We'll conclude our program for today with Music Corner. That was our program summary for today. Stand by now for the news.
Voice of Indonesia with the news.
Here is the news, first the headline. The Indonesian National Police Chief General Tito Karnavian, accompanied by several high-ranking police officers, visited newly inaugurated Indonesian military or TNI Commander Air Marshal Hadi Cahyanto on Monday in apparent gesture of cooperation and support during their meeting at the TNI headquarters in Cilangkap, East Jakarta. The two leaders stressed the importance of solidarity between their institution in securing the nation. Hadi said during a banquet held on Monday, 11 of December, in the hall of Sudirman Building. He expected the military-police solidarity could be established at all levels, not just among the upper echelon of the two institutions, congratulating the new TNI commander on his inauguration. Tito said the National Police Force was committed to supporting Hadi's leadership in strengthening the professional capacity of the armed forces. Tito added that the military and the police were only two institutions that distanced themselves from the election to maintain neutrality. General Tito Karnavian said for the police, the military is a key partner. He hoped for stronger cooperation between the TNI and the National Police in securing events in the near future, such as the 2018 regional election and 2019 general election, as well as in mutually supporting their institutional duties. Ambassador of Bosnia Herzegovina Muhammad Cengic in Jakarta on Monday said that his embassy is working on renewing economic cooperation between Indonesia and Bosnia Herzegovina. It was stated to answer the low number of both countries' total trade values. According to the data from the Indonesian Ministry of Trade, in 2017, the total trade of Indonesia and Bosnia-Herzegovina reached more than $3 million up to September. Ambassador Muhammad Cengic said that there are several cooperation projects will be prioritized by both countries, namely in the energy and military sector.
We are now trying, and this is priority of our embassy in Jakarta, to renew our economic ties, to open a new chapter in economic cooperation. Traditionally, we are present in the field of energy sector and in field of military cooperation. It was before our war, and some of our companies were having a very good record in energy sector. We are trying to use this good record to renew our ties, and first steps are already being made, and I hope that in the beginning of next year we will have first participation of our company in first projects here in Indonesia.
Ambassador Muhammad Cengek further explained that both Indonesia and Bosnia will soon strengthen cooperation in the agricultural sector. He expected that both countries would be able to sign memorandum of understanding in the early months of 2018. He believed that the memorandum of understanding would widen the scope of cooperation of both countries by providing a wide market for Indonesian agricultural product in Bosnia. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation OIC emergency meeting to be held in Istanbul, Turkey on December 13 is expected to unify voices on defending Palestine following the US President Donald Trump's decision on Jerusalem. Indonesian Foreign Minister Retno LP Marsudi stated in a press release received by Antara on Monday that the members of OIC should take advantage of this meeting, not only to unite their rejection of the US policy, but more importantly, to push for quickly realizing Palestinian independence. Minister Retno Marsudi has just discussed the diplomatic move needed for the struggle for Palestine's independence with her Jordanian counterpart, Ayman Safadi, in Amman. Among the measures will be taken by Indonesia is the presence of President Joko Widodo to the emergency meeting, which will show the government's commitment to support Palestine independence, considering the high expectation of the result of the upcoming meeting. Marsudi emphasized that it must be able to produce a strong, optimal and implementable message of the OIC member countries' refusal to the US policy to move its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. In addition, it is also important for the OIC to agree on concrete measures to support Palestine independence. The support for Palestine should also be demonstrated not only politically but also concretely by increasing humanitarian, economic, and capacity building assistance. Researchers at the Indonesian Institute of Sciences, or LIPI, said on Monday, 8th of November, the international community should heap more political pressure on the United States to try to persuade U.S. President Donald Trump to revise or take back his decision last week to formally recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Hamdan Bashar, a researcher at the LIPI Center for Political Research, said the United Nations Security Council must put pressure on the United States government as the decision clearly violated a number of Council own resolutions, including the UN General Assembly Resolution number 242 of 1967. Which called on Israel to withdraw from territories it occupied during the Six-Day War, including East Jerusalem. Hamdan said they need to reinforce the position already expressed in their previous resolution, including on the thorny issue of Jerusalem. The UN Security Council held an emergency meeting last Friday, 8th of December, in response to Trump's announcement, during which member countries widely condemned Trump's Jerusalem move, which also included a plan to relocate the American embassy to the highly contested Holy City. It is unclear whether UN Security Council members can do anything more than voice their denunciation and anger, as the United States is one of its 5 permanent members and has the power to veto any resolution on the issue. But there is possibility that a stronger position may be adopted by the organization Islamic Cooperation, which has 57 member countries, including Indonesia. This news coming to you from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. National Commission for UNESCO, the Ministry of Education and Culture held the end of 2017 plenary meeting in Jakarta on Monday, 11 of December. In the meeting, it has been reported Indonesia achievement on the UNESCO programs in 2017, three Indonesian historical documents, namely Cerita Panji or Panji Story, the Tsunami Archive, and the Borobudur Archive, are recognized by UNESCO as the memory of the world. The three documents adding more the bliss of Indonesia's wealth and histories that have been recognized by UNESCO after the previous document Ila Galiko, Babat Diponegoro, Negara Kertagama, and the ASEAN African Conference. On the sideline of the plenary meeting, the head of LIPI, Task Officer Bambang Subianto, explained by getting recognition from UNESCO, the preservation of the document will be guaranteed.
Karena yang diminta UNESCO itu adalah semua dokumen itu harus didigitalisasi, sehingga dalam bentuk elektronik.
UNESCO has requested all documents must be digitized into electronic forms. This is a preservation form so that the document is durable and the document will be more accessible. So it is one of our goals to introduce to the world that there are some important documents about our culture. Bambang further explained, with the document digitization, the younger generation will have access and recognize the document. Bambang explained the Borobudur Conservation Archive was initiated by Borobudur Conservation Center. The documentary heritage is the largest conservation project of the 20th century and is the first project to use modern technique and monument conservation. The script of Panji's story was proposed by the National Library. The Panji's story come from the 13th century about Panji's research for his lover, Princess Chandra Kirana, while the Indian Ocean Tsunami Archive was proposed by the Indonesian National Archive along with Sri Lanka. Lake Toba in North Sumatra and Lombok in West Nusa Tenggara have become more attractive among Chinese tourists as alternative tourist destination following the increase in volcanic activity at Bali's Mount Agung. Chandra Hassan, the Indonesian Consulate General for Tourism in Shanghai, China, said on Monday, December 11, beside Lake Toba and Lombok, these Chinese tourists are also interested in tourism packages to Raja Ampat, in addition to daily direct flight to Bali from China. Chandra said many airlines also offer similar services from Shanghai to Manado in North Sulawesi and Bintan in Riau Island. He said although the number of tourists visit Bali this Christmas and New Year 2018 may decrease because of the Mount Agung eruption, he is optimistic the situation will return to normal during the next year's Chinese New Year. Tourism packages to Indonesia can easily to found on the country's biggest e-commerce site, such as Ctrip. China is said to have contributed the largest number of foreign tourists to Indonesia in the past 3 years, surpassing Australia, Malaysia, and Japan. And the last item, Indonesian Industry Minister Airlangga Hartarto said six sectors, namely basic metal industry, food and beverage, transportation, machinery and equipment, chemical and pharmaceutical, and electronic are expected to boost the national industry in 2018, Erlangga said on Monday, 11 of December, in Jakarta, that the sector will be relied upon considering their significant growth this year. He said that the basic metal industry grows 10.6%, transportation industry grows 5.6%, food and beverage industry grows 9.49%. Machinery and equipment industry grows 6.35%. Chemical and pharmaceutical industry grows 8%. On the occasion, Erlangga added that the industry growth the year make up almost 20% of the gross domestic product or GDP. Growth in the industry has been fluctuating throughout 2017. The first quarter saw 4.3% growth, or lower than the economic growth in the first quarter. In the second quarter, the growth of the industry lower than the economic growth in the same quarter, and the third quarter saw the industry grew higher than the economic growth in the same quarter. And to end the news, here are the main points once again. Indonesian military, TNI, national police leaders to strengthen unity. Bosnia plans to renew its cooperation with Indonesia. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, emergency meeting expected to voice Palestine's independence. And that was the news from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
Hello, listener. Nice to be with you again in our regular program commentary. The title of today's commentary is Extraordinary Occurrence, Outbreak of Diphtheria. On December 11, 2017, Minister of Health Nila Muluk and Jakarta Governor Anies Baswedan and some official of the Jakarta Health Agency witnessed the provision of diphtheria immunization or outbreak response immunization to a student representing a number of places in Jakarta. What Minister Nila Muluk did was to deal with serious illness that is plaguing and haunting children and adults in a number of places. At least, it is known that there are 20 provinces to have been infected with dozens of casualties. Therefore, the Minister of Health set the status of extraordinary tragedy for diphtheria outbreak. Data in November 2017 shows that in Indonesia, there are 622 cases found and 32 of them became casualties. Diphtheria is a disease caused by bacteria originating from Conibacterium diphtheriae. In the past, this disease caused thousands of deaths. Even up to now, diphtheria is still prevalent in some areas in underdeveloped countries. For the survivors, the effect can suffer from paralysis of certain muscles and permanent damage to the heart and kidneys. Children aged 1 to 10 years are very prone to this disease. Rapid response by the government in handling extraordinary tragedy of diphtheria should be appreciated. Referring to the movement of its potential spread, this disease is very dangerous. Moreover, Indonesia is a very vast country with a considerable amount of population. The population mobility is very high. The sooner the outbreak diphtheria is overcome, the more people are saved. Well, listener, that was commentary read by Rahmana. Thanks for listening.
Voice of Indonesia can be heard daily through audio streaming at www.voi.co.id.
Today in History. A compilation of several important events happened on this date in the past.
This is RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with Today in History, a regular segment which brings back people and events from this date in the past as recorded in history. Let's begin with December the 12th, 1950, Transmigration Day. The displacement of the population from Java Island to outside of Java began in 1905 when the removal of 155 peasant families from Kedu, or now called Magelang, to Gedong Tataan, Lampung, Sumatra Island. This activity, which was called colonization, lasted for 37 years, that is, until the end of the Dutch colonial government in 1942. The purpose of the colonization program, in addition to overcoming the population density, was also to find cheap labor to be employed in the Dutch plantations outside Java. During the era of the Republic of Indonesia towards the end of 1950, precisely on December the 12th, initiation of transmigration program for the first time was begun. 23 families covering 77 people from Bagelen sub-district in Kedu, Central Java, was transmigrated to Sukadana, Lampung. Based on his historic momentum, December the 12th, through a Minister of Transmigration decree dated November the 23rd, 1984, the Transmigration Day was established. Turning to December 12, 1963, Kenya gains independence from Great Britain. On December 12, 1963, Kenya gained its independence from Britain and the date was established as Kenya National Day. Since the 8th century, Kenya has become an Arab colony. The Portuguese had come to Kenya in the 15th century and in 1895, the British began to colonize the area. In the 1950s, the people of Kenya started to rise against British rule led by Jomo Kenyatta. After Kenya won its independence, Jomo Kenyatta was elected prime minister and a year later he was appointed president. In subsequent developments, Kenya has always been hit by wars with its neighbors, internal conflicts, and natural disasters. The country itself has rich natural resources, including oil, gold, agate, and sapphire. The last is from December 12, 1992. Tsunami struck the island of Flores in Indonesia, killing approximately 3,000 people. The tsunami that devastated the island of Flores occurred because of an earthquake in Flores Sea, north of the island. The quake was recorded on December 12, 1992 with a magnitude of 7.5 and triggered a tsunami wave and swept settlements on the coast of Flores. Well, that was Today in History of RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. I'm Anna Trijayakasih.
Today in History, a compilation of several important events happened on this date in the past.
Focus, daily news and events.
Hello, listener. This is RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, with our regular program, Focus. The topic for today's Focus is, through the ASEAN Economic Community, AEC, the government needs institutional support of construction service development. The government of Indonesia needs the support of all construction stakeholders, including the Construction Service Development Agency, LPJK, to build the infrastructure. Director General of Construction at the Public Works and People Housing Ministry, Sarit Burhanuddin, when giving a briefing to the National Forum for Cooperation and Empowerment of Construction Services in Tangerang, Banten, said that the government needs the Construction Services Development Agency, LPJK, and vice versa. As quoted from the press release of the ministry on Friday, Sarip said that the government support the LPG to become the motor of increasing the competence of construction workers. This is in accordance with the mandate of Law No. 2, 2017 on construction services. Sarit Burhanuddin also said that every construction worker working in construction services must be certified. The Construction Service Development Agency plays a major role in the certification and registration of construction workers and training to produce qualified human resource construction. He further said that although the chairman of the provincial LPJK is inaugurated by the governor, while the national LPJK board is inaugurated by the Minister of Public Works and People Housing Ministry, the standards for certification is not different. The certificates issued by provincial LPKGKs should be applicable throughout the province. Even in the future, this can be recognized internationally. Sarit Burhanuddin reminded that through the ASEAN Economic Community AEC, the national construction workforce will compete directly with foreign workers. While the number of national construction workers who had been certified is only reaching about 10% of the total 7 million workers. Meanwhile, the government's ability to print certified construction workforce is only about 30,000 to 50,000 construction workers per year. Sharit Burhanuddin added that the number is not enough compared with the needs of construction workers for infrastructure development. He is worried that this opportunity may be taken by foreign workers. Thus, the Construction Service Development Agency and all construction stakeholders should cooperate to help this task. This national forum was also attended by large and medium-sized construction service companies in Indonesia. The aim is to invite and generate commitment in the development of construction services. Well, listener, that was Focus Today, read by Rahmana. Thanks for listening.
Here is our news in brief. The Indonesian National Police Chief General Tito Karnavian, accompanied by several high-ranking police officers, visited newly inaugurated Indonesian Military TNI Commander Air Marshal Hadi Cahyanto on Monday in an apparent gesture of cooperation and support. Ambassador of Bosnia Herzegovina Muhammad Cengic in Jakarta on Monday said that his embassy is working on renewing economic cooperation between Indonesia and Bosnia Herzegovina. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation OIC emergency meeting to be held in Istanbul, Turkey on December 13 is expected only voices on defending Palestine following the U.S. President Donald Trump's decision on Jerusalem, Indonesia. Foreign Minister Retno LP Marsudi stated in a press release received by Antara on Monday that the members of OIC should take advantage of this meeting not only to unite their rejection of the U.S. policy but more importantly to push for quickly realizing Palestinian independence. Researchers at the Indonesian Institute of Science, or LIPI, said on Monday, 8th of November, the international community should heap more political measures on the United States to try to persuade U.S. President Donald Trump to revise or take back his decision last week to formally recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. National Commission for UNESCO, the Ministry of Education and Culture, held the end of 2017 plenary meeting in Jakarta Monday, 11 of December. Lake Toba in North Sumatra and Lombok in West Nusa Tenggara have become more attractive among Chinese tourists as alternative tourist destination following the increase in volcanic activity at Bali's Mount Agung. And the last item, Indonesian Industry Minister Erlangga Hartarto said six sector, namely basic metal industry, food and beverage, transportation, machinery and equipment, chemical and pharmaceutical, and electronics are expected to boost the national industry in 2018. And that was the news in brief from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
You're still tuned to the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, broadcasting to the frequencies of 9525 kHz, 11.785 kHz, and 15.150 kHz. You can also listen through our audio streaming at www.voi.co.id. Here is our next program, Indonesian Wonder and Miscellany.
let's listen to various information of Indonesian arts and culture in a daily segment of Indonesian Wonder.
Hello listeners, welcome to Indonesian Wonder, a daily segment featuring tourism, culinary arts, fine arts, and culture from various regions across Indonesia. In today's edition, we will introduce you to Podo Pozo Ritual in Flores, East Nusa Tenggara. So stay tuned. Flores is one of the islands in East Nusa Tenggara province. The name of Flores Island comes from the Portuguese language Copa de Flores, which means Tanjung Bunga. There are many ethnic groups live on the island with their own cultural characteristics. But in general, they have the same livelihood, planting in the fields. Because the main livelihood as farmers, they are very dependent on nature. They faithfully perform their cultural rituals so that they usually got abundant harvests. One of the cultural ritual called Podo Pozo Ritual. Podo Pozo Ritual is a mystical rite of Kenge Padarambu, Watugene Village, Kota Komba Subdistrict East Manggarai Regency, Flores, East Nusa Tenggara. Listeners, in a local language of Kenge tribe, Podo means inter and Pozo means locus. In accordance with the belief of the Kenge tribe, Pozo is an evil animal that damages rice, corn, and other plants. The animal cannot be destroyed with chemical drugs. So Podo Pozo is a ritual inherited from the ancestors of Kenge tribe to deliver the locus to its creator at sea. In accordance with the Kenge tribe belief that all beings in this world have their creators, not only locusts. The ritual is also aimed to eradicate rats, maggot, and other pests. This ritual must be carried out every year. Podo Pozo ritual must be performed on the river bank or at the corner of two rivers in the village. The pest animals attack the rice fields and damage the stalk of rice and corn. The traditional elders must perform customary rites. The local people believe that the animal came from the sea. Before the Podo Pozo ritual is held, the Kenge ethnic leader prepare a chicken and 7 small bamboo sticks containing rice. Kenge people called it kolo or bamboo rice. They prepare 7 pieces of bamboo, should not be less or more. During the performance of Podo Pozo ritual, the custom leader along with the land owners headed to Sanggan, the estuary of the two big rivers, Waikwe River and Waimokel River. They also prepare a boat made of banana tree bark. Then the locust, rats, and mango are put in a boat. The chicken liver and nasi kolo or kolo rice is dedicated to Moritana and Dragon Tana, the owner of animal. When the rites are completed, then the custom leader brings the boat to the courier and leads to the boat to sail to the sea. Once the ritual completed, the custom leader and the people who present in the ritual ceremony should not look back. The atmosphere must be calm, quiet, and solemn. During the ritual takes place, women are not allowed to participate. They stay inside the Marumizi traditional house to prepare the dishes when the custom leader together with the landowner return. On the second day after the Podobozo ritual, the community are prohibited to work in the fields. It is believed the disaster of locust or pest will return if the prohibition is violated. That was the regular Indonesian Wonderful today with the topic Podobozo Ritual. We will meet again tomorrow with other interesting topics. Sampai jumpa.
Speak Bahasa Indonesia easily and correctly. We present to you Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia.
This is Terry Wood Service Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, a lesson in Bahasa Indonesia or Indonesian language on the radio, which introduces some Indonesian vocabulary and guides you to use them in a conversation. Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia is a collaboration between Voice of Indonesia, RRI Foreign Broadcasting Station, and the Agency for Language Development, the Ministry of Education and Culture of the Republic of Indonesia. Today's topic is Tidak Bisa Bangun Pagi, or in English, Can't Wake Up Early. First, I'll introduce some Indonesian vocabulary and idioms related to the topic today. I'll say each word slowly twice. You can follow after me. Tidak bisa. Tidak bisa. In English, cannot. Bangun. Bangun. To wake up. Pagi. Pagi. Morning. Besok. Besok. Tomorrow. Membangunkan, membangunkan, to wake someone up. Jam 4 pagi, jam 4 pagi, 4 a.m. Kenapa, kenapa, why? Kemana, kemana, where? Pergi, pergi, to go. Takut, takut, afraid. Terlambat, terlambat, late. Jam alarm, jam alarm, alarm clock. Berbunyi, berbunyi, to ring or to make sound. Mematikan, mematikan, to turn off. Terus, terus, then. Tidur, tidur, to sleep. Next is a conversation on tidak bisa bangun pagi, or in English, can wake up early in the morning. As usual, I'll say every sentence slowly twice and you can follow after me. The conversation is between Rama and Andi at home. Andi, bisakah kamu besok membangunkan saya jam 4 pagi? Andi, bisakah kamu besok membangunkan saya jam 4 pagi? In English, Andi, can you wake me up tomorrow at 4 a.m.? Kenapa? Kamu mau kemana? Kenapa? Kamu mau kemana? In English, why? Where are you going? Saya besok pagi harus pergi ke Bandung. Saya besok pagi harus pergi ke Bandung. Tomorrow morning I have to go to Bandung. Saya takut terlambat. Saya takut terlambat. I'm afraid of being late. Karena saya tidak bisa bangun pagi. Karena saya tidak bisa bangun pagi. Because I cannot wake up early in the morning. Apakah kamu tidak punya jam alarm? Apakah kamu tidak punya jam alarm? Don't you have an alarm clock? Ada. Walaupun ada alarm, saya tetap tidak bisa bangun. Ada. Walaupun ada alarm, saya tetap tidak bisa bangun. Yes, I do. Although there is an alarm, I still cannot wake up early in the morning. Alarm berbunyi, saya langsung matikan. Saya terus tidur lagi. Alarm berbunyi, saya langsung matikan. Saya terus tidur lagi. When the alarm rings, I turn it off immediately, then I go back to sleep again. Baiklah, besok saya bangunkan kamu. Baiklah, besok saya bangunkan kamu. Alright, tomorrow I'll wake you up. That was Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, a lesson in Bahasa Indonesia or the Indonesian language on the radio. Until tomorrow with another topic, sampai berjumpa lagi. Till we meet again.
Music Corner, presenting various kinds of Indonesian music and songs from the Voice of Indonesia.
Hello listeners, wherever you are, welcome back to the regular Music Corner, a musical segment which introduces you to Indonesian music, either traditional or modern one. In today's edition, we will present dangdut songs, so stay tuned.
Thank you.
listeners, you just listened to the song Balada Dangdut sung by trio Sekar Langit. The album was released with the same title, Balada Dangdut, in 1996. The song, which was composed by Rades Daswa, was taken as the soundtrack in the soap opera Balada Dangdut in one of the national private television at the time. The song Balada Dangdut tells about the invitation to sing Dangdut songs together, so that Dangdut then popular abroad. This is one way to raise the Dangdut image, which was then considered as a lower class music. Through Dangdut, trio Sekar Langit with its personnel Iis Dahlia, Elvi Sukaisi, and Camelia Malik try to bring a modern touch on the appearance and packaging of the album. Moreover, the making process of Balada Dangdut album is also done in Indonesia and America. The mixing process was done at Airy La Studio, Glendale, California, with a modern digital technology. The technical work was done by the Americans, while the art dangdut done by Indonesian artist Dangdut, so it was a good collaboration of work. Well, listeners, let's listen to the next song entitled Tentang Cinta by trio Sekar Langit. Happy listening! listeners, Trio Sekar Langit originally born from the initiative of Camelia Malik. The idea is simple. She wants to combine the three powers of female dangdut singers who are famous and have many fans. Then the trio released their debut album, namely Balada Dangdut. In this album, there are two leading songs, namely Balada Dangdut and Tentang Cinta. The song entitled Tentang Cinta has just been dedicated to you. The song was composed by Evi Tamala with tales about love. Compared to the previous song, Balada Dangdut Cinta, the single track of trio Sekar Langit is much accepted by the people, especially the dangdut lovers. In the album Balada Cinta, Iis Dahlia, Elvi Sukaisi, and Camelia Malik only feature two new songs. Most of the songs in the album are their own popular songs. Well, listeners, to conclude our segment for today, let's listen to the last two songs entitled Matahariku by Iis Dahlia and Sampai Jumpa Lagi by Evi Tamala. Enjoy the songs.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz and 11785 kHz for English program, or listen to audio on demand at en.voi.co.id. Send your criticism and suggestions to en.voi.co.id or send your letter to Voice of Indonesia, RRI World Service, Jalan Medan Merdeka Barat, No. 4 and 5, Jakarta, or P.O. Box 1157, Jakarta 10011, Indonesia. And join us on Facebook, Voice of Indonesia, and Twitter, VoI Indonesia.